Welcome to Bitches on Comics. That is where you are. That is where I am. That is where my other host is. That is where our guest is. Welcome. Good morning. It's morning for me. I don't know if you can tell, but I am a morning person. So therefore, I am extremely excited, more excited than I usually am when we record at like 6 p.m. and I'm like getting ready to be in bed soon because, you know, 6 p.m. is late. So
it's your bedtime.
Yeah, I'm so good at intros. So
and I'm Essie Fleenor.
I didn't say who I am. I never even got to that. So I just wanted to tell people where I'm at emotionally first. But I am Sarah
Century. You know, it's a good place to start.
And I do have a co-host, which I believe you already
met. I almost said I'm Sarah Century again. And I'm Essie Fleenor, not Sarah Century. I'm losing my voice because I socialized outdoors safely, but I talk to people, and apparently that's enough to take my entire voice from me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that's what happened to Ariel in The Little Mermaid.
I'm pretty sure she was like, I want to be a part of my own world away from all of these assholes. And everyone just misinterpreted it. You know what? That's how I feel. Anyways, I am super excited because today we have a guest we've had on before, the incredible Carmen Maria Machado. Hi, Carmen. How you doing?
Hi. It's me. Hello.
It's a me, a Carmen.
Exactly.
We are just so happy to have you here, listeners. You likely know who Carmen Maria Machado is. If you don't necessarily remember, we will forgive you this once. Carmen was also on episode 131, The Filter of Non-Realism. And that's where we talked about your super cool comic, The Low, Low Woods, which Sarah and I are huge fans of. We also got into her body and other parties in the dream house. Wow, we had like a really big conversation. We're like, so Carmen, let's just talk about your oeuvre. Let's get through the whole thing. And then I remember very sweetly, I think it was actually, it might have been on mic, it might have been off mic. We somehow wandered into Jennifer's body land. And you were like, oh, if you ever want to talk about Jennifer's body, I'll come back to the pod. And like 2 seconds later, I emailed your assistant, Juliet. Juliet, thank you for arranging this.
Shout out to Juliet.
Juliet. And Juliet was like, oh, you're back. No, Juliet was lovely. It was like, yeah, let's make this happen.
Like, are you actually in the interview right now and you're emailing me?
Juliet's like, you could have given it 13 seconds. I'm like, actually, I couldn't. It was now or literally never. So yes, we were obviously, we jumped at that chance and the occasion, so to speak, for talking about a film that, you know, I don't even know what year did it come out?
2009.
Mm-hmm. 2009. So
it came out 13 years ago.
13 years ago. The occasion, there is a timely occasion. I mean, it's always timely to talk about Jennifer's body, especially during spooky season. But also is because there's this amazing anthology of essays from queer perspectives about horror film and TV, or is it just film? I've only read your essay so far, unfortunately.
It's I think exclusively film in this book.
Okay. And super cool, brought to us by The Feminist Press, which is an amazing publisher. Listeners, you might remember them because they also published Bishak Sohm's memoir, Spellbound, which we are huge fans of. And so, you know, I wanted to start with learning about how did you get brought into this? I mean, Carmen, you're always writing. You write so many essays, so many stories. You're working on a novel.
It's so funny because I feel like I'm not writing anything right now. So it's very sweet of you to say, because I've literally just been like angsting over my lack of productivity for like weeks now.
I feel like those are the only two modes as a writer is like, right? I'm writing too much or I'm mad at myself that I'm not writing.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I got looped into this anthology. You know, I got a message from the editor who was like, you know, we'd love to include you in this book. And, you know, I get invited to do a lot of things. It's true. I get invited to do a lot of things and I say no to most of them because I literally am just like, I don't have time and I want to like have a life. And also I'm trying to write all my own stuff. But every so often, like, a project will come along where I'm like, oh, I actually have so many thoughts about that. And, like, I could write an essay about this with my, you know, with my eyes closed, because it's, like, already a subject that I've been giving a lot of thought to anyway. So it actually wouldn't be that hard for me to write it. And this is an example of that, where I was like, oh my God, I have so many thoughts. And immediately I was like, they were like, you know, pitch us some possible movies. And I was like, Jennifer's Body. And they were like, any other? And I was like, no, Jennifer's Body. Like, I was like, that is it's that or nothing. And they were like, great, it's yours. And I was like, thank you. I was very insistent. And so, yeah. And it just was a movie that I have a really, like, interesting relationship with. And I actually had a lot of thoughts, sort of had already had a lot of thoughts about sort of the reception of the movie and the way that specifically queer people talk about this movie and sort of related phenomena of ideas of queer baiting, which is, like, I have a lot of thoughts about. So the essay just became, mm-hmm. I don't know, it, like, was very easy to write. Like, it took me, like, a day, you know, because I was just like, yeah, I already am thinking about this. I had to rewatch Jennifer's Body. I rewatched it, like, 3 or 4 times in the course of, like, 2 weeks, which was delightful. I made, like, everybody in my life rewatch it with me. People who hadn't seen it, because I was like, it's so perfect and I just want to share it with you. And also I have to write about it. So I have to, like, keep watching it and, you know, absorbing it and thinking about it and writing stuff down. And the rest is history, I guess.
Mm. Yeah. One of the wildest things about that movie to me is how incredibly dismissive all of the contemporary reviews of it were, and how they're hard to read, you know, like, you read them and you're like, oh, God.
Like the contemporaneous reviews. Yeah, totally.
Like the ones that were out like whenever it came out. And right. It was just, it, like, looking back, literally painful. Like, they're really hard to read for the most part.
I also made that observation because I was curious. I was like, I remember the reviews of this movie being terrible, but, like, you know, just want to make sure that I was confirming that was correct. And I was also, like, flabbergasted by how bad the criticism was of this movie. And
the
I feel like it's,
they said are, like, just out of control. Yeah.
Yeah. No. And just, like, not understanding anything about it.
Uh huh.
You know, and really insisting upon it.
Yeah, no, that's it, right? Like, they're so, so set on being like, I will not get this.
Right, exactly.
You're just, like,
exactly.
Stunned. But what I also thought was really interesting is there's obviously your essay, but there has been so much talk around this movie in, you know, the last few years, like, now that it's being kind of rediscovered and everything, to the point where it's, you know, your specific essay is talking a lot about people talking about the queer baiting, which we'll definitely get into more. Once again, not to agree necessarily with that term, but I would say that not just that, there's all of these different takes on it. So what I find to be really interesting is how dismissive it was. And then you look now how the criticism around this movie just spans so many subjects that you're like, this is a movie that was so rife for criticism. So it makes it almost more egregious in a weird way, where you're like, wow, you couldn't think of anything to say. And now we have, you know, people could write a whole book about this movie, I feel like.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and I think it also has made me think a lot about, like, I remember I gave an interview about this essay and about this movie a few months ago. And I was saying to the interviewer, like, you know, it kind of reminds me about how when I saw a movie that I saw, I guess it was last year now. Was it last? God, I feel like time. What is time? Recently, a movie that I saw that I was really shocked by the reviews and to the point where I was so mad I wrote my own essay about it was Promising Young Woman, which I also feel like is a movie that, like, was really, like, panned in this way that I found incredibly surprising. And I just had this experience of going through the reviews of it being like, wrong, wrong, wrong. Like, I would read the reviews and I would just be like, I'm really, like, astonished by some of these perspectives, and it made me so mad that I then, like, literally pitched and wrote a whole essay for The New Yorker about this movie. Because I was like, I just feel like, but I do feel like the experience of, like, you know, watching, being like, I think this movie's gonna age into itself, and I think that it's just, like, saying stuff that people are not ready to sort of hear, which I think is also true of Jennifer's Body, where it was just like, you know, saying all these things, not just about queerness, but about, like, trauma and, like, you know, like, you know, like, sort of big disasters and, like, sort of this sappy sentimentality around sort of shared public tragedies. And, you know, there's just, like, all this stuff that's sort of being laid out. And I think people just weren't ready for it. And so it's been really interesting, right, watching people kind of come into the movie, like grow into the movie. And yeah, it's sort of like, I mean, I feel like, so we're now we're at 13 years, but like, I feel like 10 years ago, I feel like 2019, like people were already, you know, kind of like on the 10-year anniversary of this movie being like, eh, like maybe we were really being sexist and maybe people were wrong about this film. And so it's kind of nice to be able to like see that happen in kind of real time, you know?
Mm-hmm. I know exactly what you're saying whenever you're talking about just going through reviews and being like, disagree, don't like this opinion. Because I pretty recently, like the Killing Eve finale, I kind of felt the same way about where people like were just kind of panning it and just like, this didn't give us what we wanted. And it's like, sometimes things don't. Like,
I think, you know, I wonder if, not to like go super off topic, but I do think that there is something about like our current status of like, I don't even know what to call it, like fan culture that feels like kind of unmoored from like, it's like as an artist, I have like lots of complicated feelings about it because I think that people do want certain experiences. And like, I'm not saying that like creators are like, you know, not able to do things incorrectly. And I'm not saying that they can't like, you know, fuck up in some interesting way or bad way. But I do think that like, there's this thing about being an artist, which is like, you can't write for everybody. You can't please everybody. And ultimately you're sort of doing something for yourself. And I think that like, if you try to think about what everybody else wants from you as a creator, you'll go crazy because it's like literally impossible to like write, to create something for a lot of other people, right? So ultimately you're like have to please yourself. And so, yeah, I feel like there's this thing where like people want stuff from narrative, from shows and movies and books and, you know, God help me, but like intellectual properties, you know, and it's like interesting to sort of watch how that's become so muddied. And I think that there is something kind of like strange about that. And I think it complicates like how artists are able to tell stories, which is just, it's a weird time to be alive and making
I
stuff.
I think so too. Yeah. And it's like you'll see it in genres where you're really actually very surprised by it, where you're like, wait, horror? You're like, you watched a horror movie and you're like mad that it didn't do the thing that you wanted it to do and give you like a happy ending. Like that seems well established in the history of horror that you're not always gonna get, you know, the thing that you wanted out of it, I guess. But that gives you something different. Like, I don't know. But I was going to ask, talking about queer horror, like you mentioned in the essay that you are a big fan of a lot of queer horror properties. So I was wondering, you know, Jennifer's Body is such a big one, but were there others kind of like leading in? Are there other queer horror movies that you would put on kind of the same tier as Jennifer's Body?
I mean, Jennifer's Body has a distinct soft space in my mind. Like does it occupy its own kind of like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's sort of hard to compare them. Sure. I mean, I feel like there are other horror movies that have sort of spoken to me in really intense ways that maybe that I don't have as good of a sense of like what they're like, the sort of the social space they occupy. So like Hellraiser is a really good example. Like, I love Hellraiser. I feel like the intense sort of kinky queer energy of Hellraiser is like so distinct. I don't actually know like what, how people read Hellraiser when it came out, because it came out when I was 1 year old. So like, I don't know. It's so just like sadistic and beautiful and weird and like, just so kind of, and I'm just like, I just love it. I love that energy. And I don't know. I also just love movies. Like, I like queer villains, you know? I mean, I talk about this. I mean, also like another good one would be like, you know, Stranger by the Lake, which I actually talk about in my memoir when I talk about kind of queer villainry. And like, you know, I think that there's this like branch of thought. Well, maybe thought is a strong word, but this sort of perspective that people have where they're like, ugh, like it's awful how there are all these like gay villains, like villains shouldn't be gay. And I'm like, actually, I love gay villains. I think they're great.
Yeah.
Like, I think they're like really
Sarah
interesting.
Sarah and I talk about like, this all the time because we're why can't we be everything? You know, we want to be all the things, especially like the campy, bitchy villain. Like, that's awesome.
Totally.
Yeah. What about your own bad side? Like, that's the thing. Right. I feel like when people want stuff like that, then they don't look at their own bad side. Right. And that concerns me. Like,
right.
That makes
totally.
Me like, you have to know yourself and you have to know the people that you've interacted with. Like, we've all known an evil gay for sure. We've all been the evil gay for sure, you know? And it's like, you should like maybe tackle that, deal with it, you know, not be that person. But that doesn't mean that that person doesn't exist in us, right? So I always think about that whenever I'm thinking about queer villains, because it's like, yeah, of course, whenever it was you know, 150 years of queer villains and only queer villains, then yeah, that was kind of bad, right? But that's really not the case anymore.
No, of course. Like, you know, and the problem is that like when like queer becomes shorthand for villainry.
Yeah.
Okay. So like then, like, I mean, the problem is obvious on its face. It's like, okay, so you have like, you don't want to like make this connection as like, if you have a villain, they must be gay, or like queer characters, the only queer characters that appear are villains. But also I find even historically gay villains are really interesting. Like I love mm-hmm. Mrs. Danvers from Rebecca. You know what I mean?
I love
like,
Mrs. Danvers.
Right. Like it's such a good, it's such a good, and it's like, yeah, that's a problem. But also like, I don't know. Like I'm like, it's fine.
The read from the novel to the movie is like such a different right. one, I think, because I feel like yeah. in the novel, it's kind of her coming to grips with the fact that eventually she is going to have to move on from Rebecca. And then mm-hmm. in the movie, it's just like, I'm going to set this whole house on fire.
Right, like, right. Totally, totally.
Which I'm honestly like that image of her in the burning house, mm-hmm. you're just mm-hmm. like, this is maybe one of the most iconic movies or like the moments in film at all. Totally. Like ever. So I don't know. It's like, yeah, maybe I don't want to hang out with Mrs. Danvers, but like, maybe I do, you know, like, I don't know. But yeah, I love her. Like, that's the thing. A lot of the classics, I actually wrote about this before where it was like, you go through and you find these kind of like femme fatale types that are very queer coded and old, like Hollywood film, and they're always the most interesting. Like you can't stop thinking about them through the movie because you're like, what's she doing though?
Like, this is what I'm saying is I feel like also queer villains are always the most interesting people on the screen. And I'm like, mm-hmm. that, I think that's really good for us, honestly. I think that's great press for being gay, where it's like, it's like you could be like the worst character, like the most like, you know, morally bankrupt character, and like people will not stop looking at you because they're like Serious. Riveted by you. And like, I'm
Lesbian
like, that
vampires,
is.
Vampires, right?
Right, like, exactly, exactly.
I was thinking about that with like, particularly with bisexual villainy. I was thinking about cat people. The main character whose name, Sarah, what is it?
Irene
is such a good bi villain. And like her, just like the way that she haunts them. You know what I mean? Like she's just so fascinating in her sexuality and the way she shows up on the screen and the way that it's implied. The sort of she's haunted, she's haunting. And I feel that with Jennifer's body too, the sort of she's haunted and she's haunting. And I love that. I don't know why that's particularly bi or maybe that's just how it's applied, but like that duality to me is so fucking beautiful and like, oh, captivating. I can't get enough of it. I'm like, oh, yes.
Well, I think that part of what it is about a bi villain specifically, and again, like this is not a statement on like bisexuality as an actual practice, but like just as an idea, is that bisexuality more than monosexuality, so more than like homosexuality or heterosexuality, is it's rapacious, right? Or this idea is that it's like, it's this hunger that is like unbound by concepts of gender, you know? And so I feel like that's what makes a bi villain feel especially acute, like even more than like a lesbian villain or a gay villain or a straight villain, because there's just this sense of like, yeah, rapaciousness. I don't know really what other word to use, but.
Well, and I was saying like an unpredictability, right? Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
If
sure,
someone
totally.
Can fuck anybody in the room and someone can kill anybody in the room and mm. you kind of want them to fuck you and you kind of want them to kill you.
Right.
But you
exactly.
kind of, you definitely don't want them to kill you and you definitely shouldn't want them to fuck you. Like that's really rich. There's lots of layers yeah. there. Yeah. And I love, as a bi person, like I love that because I think as a human being who's alive with a sexuality, spend a lot of time being like, you know, bi people are just people. But then in my head, I'm like, we're here to take your genders. We're here to take your sexualities. Mm-hmm. We're going to show you things you didn't want to know about yourself. Obviously, mm-hmm. again, in my head, and then I guess on my podcast, that is how I feel about bisexuality. Because I think mm-hmm. It's such a threat to, and you get into this in your essay, Carmen, into cis heteronormativity. It's such a threat of the patriarchy. It's such a threat because it's not either or. And so the danger, right, and I'm using scare quotes because obviously we all know there's nothing dangerous about bisexuality, but the danger to a cis heteronormative patriarchy is, wait, you're sort of unsettling the very basis of what we have here.
Right, and I think, and there's just something very I mean, I talk in the essay, I'm sort of quoting some theorists, but I'm talking about like, you know, rupture or like the intention of being lost. And it's like, you know, queerness, it really is this, you're walking away from something. And that's true whether you're, you know, a lesbian or gay or you're bi or queer or whatever, like whatever way you think about it, you are walking away from something that's really fixed. And I just, you know, and as like a, I mean, I don't really describe myself necessarily. I prefer queer to bisexual just to describe myself personally. But I feel like that is, there is something really sort of potent and interesting about that, regardless of, you know, how it manifests, even in terms of relationships. So like, you know, even if you are a bi person who like is dating, say, like a person of the opposite gender, however you define that, like there is still this intention of being lost, like it still exists. And so there is something like different.
Yeah, I was wondering how you feel about the interactions between the two girls in the movie, because I think that they have such a fascinating dynamic. And it's kind of interesting how things go, right? Because even though they become adversarial, I feel like by the end, they're kind of doing the same thing, right? So I was interested, how did you feel about that and how it manifests in the movie?
I mean, I think so much of that movie is about, I mean, the thing that I think makes it work, like the engine between the two of them, is this like lifelong relationship of like give and take and supplication, you know? So like, there's mm-hmm. that scene that like a flashback where the girls are like in the sandbox and Jennifer cuts her hand on something and Needy like puts her mouth to it to like make it better, you know? And, you know, the various scenes where they sort of show these flashbacks with the two girls is really setting up a dynamic of like, you know, one sort of figure who sort of looms large, and that's Jennifer, right? And then this sort of girl who exists kind of on the other side of it. And like, again, like even in the beginning, she's like, you know, she's the hottie, I'm the dork, like that, you know, that's like the energy of the movie. But they're really good friends, like through that, right? So they've been friends since they were children. They have this strong connection, but like they're always sort of like skittering along this line of this power dynamic, you know, and which is super hot and also like really interesting. Yeah. And like, and you know, also feels like very true to life in terms of just friendships, period. And also, especially like early friendships, but also all friends, that can happen literally whenever. But then when you also contextualize it in terms of sexuality, where it's like you also have these two sort of people who are like in many ways like growing. I mean, I sort of say in the essay, like you imagine that if they had lived, or, you know, I mean, Needy lives, but, you know, if Jennifer had lived sort of beyond her teenage years, and if Needy, we saw Needy, like they probably would be expressing their queerness in really different ways, like because they seem to have mm-hmm. a different relationship with their desire and like with what they want, you know. And so I don't know. I feel like you're just seeing what is actually, I think this is also why it's so compelling, is like you're seeing like a friendship with like a very understandable and ordinary dynamic. And you're also seeing that in the context of like two queer, but like queer in maybe different ways slightly, people who are like coming to understand something about their bodies and their desires. Mm-hmm. Obviously with all like a horror lens with this like really ridiculous plot sort of like layered on right. top, which is like what makes it so, because it's not obvious, that's what it is, right? It's like requires you to kind of like peel away like, you know, the demonic possession and the like, you know, the human sacrifice and the Satanists and the, you know, it like requires you to kind of peel that away, but that's kind of what's underneath.
Yeah, what I find to be maybe one of the most interesting things, because as you were saying, Needy is very much, even though I believe is pretty much the protagonist of the film, I think most of the story is told from
totally,
her perspective.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it is interesting because the whole time she's really trying to emphasize what a meek person she is. And then in Jennifer's absence at the end, she essentially becomes Jennifer. She's killing the band. Like, she's doing all of the things that I do feel that Jennifer would have done. And I think right. that there's just yeah. something absolutely fascinating about that interaction yeah. between them, because we all do that in a weird way. Like, we'll have these friendships that'll be really intense. And sometimes when those friendships end, you know, that doesn't exist in your life anymore. That person doesn't exist in your life anymore. And so you kind of start to step into that role for yourself, or you right. take kind of the things that you liked about that.
I think that's a really good point. And I think that's true even if, I mean, I think obviously the rupture, like the big dramatic friend breakup that,
yeah,
is, which is like a really queer thing, I think,
oh
where
God,
it's like,
yeah.
you know, that is queer on its own. But I think that's also just true even of friendships that don't break up. Like, I actually, Like, I sort of always tell people that, like, you know, when I went to college, I, like, didn't understand that I was queer, even though I'd been, in retrospect, I was doing queer things and having queer thoughts for a very long time. But I remember, like, getting to college and meeting my friend Anne, and Anne was, like, had, like, short dyed hair and, like, was just kind of, like, punky and weird. And she was, like, I'm bisexual. And I was, like, I don't know what you are exactly, but I want to be whatever you are. Like, I remember just, like, having this, like, incredibly clear thought of, like, wait, that's what I am. And yes. It was like the first moment that I had like a really clear understanding of my own queerness. And it was just literally like looking at another person and how they were manifesting in front of me. And I was like, oh my God, like that's what, you know, and it like was my first sort of understanding of that as like a clear, you know, as like a identity. And so I feel like, yeah, there is in some ways, right. It's like Jennifer, you know, she dies, like, you know, which is like really sad. I mean, it's funny because she's such
honestly
a, like,
sad. Yeah.
It's super sad. I mean, I feel like the scene where you sort of see the flashback where Jennifer's getting sacrificed and she's like crying, like, it's actually like really intense. And it's like, you know, it's partially a story about a friendship, right? That they are having this big friend breakup and it is this like loss that's like spurned by this like horrible, violent act. Even though the film is like campy and like sort of plays it in this kind of weird, campy way, like it is really sad. But then also, right, you're getting to see Needy become her own monster and like come into herself as a person, which is like really beautiful.
Well, and there was something that both of you have said here that I kept thinking about, which is like, I think the perennial bisexual problem of like, I can't tell if I want to be them or fuck them. And like that, that tension, right? I actually think is a really like bi experience. And I think, you know, lots of other people probably have it too, but because of the sort of like, the sort of voracious, there's this moment where Jennifer's like, chips looking, oh, what does she say? Spicy? Is that the word?
Or salty. 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 I think. Yeah.
Chips looking,
she loves to
salty
say that.
To me. And you're like, oh my God, Jennifer, you are the worst and you're amazing because it's this double desire, right? She both wants Needy and she wants what Needy wants. And she wants to take what Needy wants from her and she wants to take Needy. And it's like, it's all like this raw libido. And I, you know, you all were talking about, you know, having to dig through the layers of the demon possession. And I'm like, oh my God. Sometimes I feel like the demon possession is the bisexuality. Like she is, I think I would argue bi before that moment. There's just certain little things, as you've pointed out, Carmen, the hand, the way that they look at each other when she's in color guard, like too cute. But there's this like way that it's like, it goes from maybe being like, just figuring itself out into like full engine, right? It's like drives her forward. And I don't know. I'm all about like any metaphor that makes gender or sexuality like demonic or evil or what have you. Because for me, I was this very Christian, very lost, very like, I'm a good girl. And the experience of discovering first my sexuality, then my gender, and realizing they were always there was kind of like, oh my God, there was this demon with me all the time. You know, through my healing, through my own leaving of that religious tradition, I have sort of a love for those demons. But there's a reason I never leave the occult and horror very far behind. Right. They're very rich metaphors for something that is, again, as you say, that rupture really did rupture my life. It broke it open to realize I was attracted to another woman in school. You know, it was huge to be like, oh my God, there's a word for the way that I felt about how my parents would talk to me about being a lady, which was horrible. Oh, actually turns out non-binary, you know, those things, they're funny. And they're also this huge life changing moment. And that's what I felt when she gets stabbed by the fucking low shoulder Satanists. And they're like singing Jenny, I Got Your Number. And they're fucking stabbing her. And I was like, if that isn't the hilarity and the horror of finding oneself in this like pastiche moment, I just don't know what is.
Yeah. I mean, I think also the reason that like bisexuality specifically, I think, offers this confusion about like if you want to fuck somebody or be somebody is also because I feel like, I mean, I guess I also like as a not monosexual, I don't want to speak out of turn, but a lot of my relationships have been with people who have been like, oh, at some point I realized like kissing, I felt nothing when I kissed a man. Like I felt like it was like kissing a tree, you know, and then I kissed a woman and I was like, oh my God, this is everything I've ever wanted. And like, I feel like for some people, there is this experience of like, you realize like you do not want one thing, but you want the other. But I think that with, or, you know, and obviously all this is like assuming, I mean, gender is a spectrum, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I mean, I understand, but like, it's like, I feel like, you know, there's this moment where you're sort of like, well, this one thing speaks to me and this other thing does not speak to me. And that's one kind of experience. But I think that with queerness or bisexuality, where you do actually have a person for whom like you're like attracted to lots of different kinds of people, like it is weird because it doesn't feel as clear cut. Do you know what I mean? Because like, I also had crushes on boys. And I think one of the reasons that I didn't maybe automatically assume that I was gay or queer was because I was like, well, I like boys. And like, I don't like boys. You know, that's not, you know, when I was like a teenager, I just didn't understand that there was this like this yes and. And I think like the yes and was the thing that I was looking for. And I didn't have any kind of clear sort of like narrative for when I was, again, like trying to figure out what the hell was going on with me, you know?
Well, and I think this is a perfect segue to something you talk about in the essay. You actually quote Katy Perry. You talk about, oh God, that line is so good, right? I like the taste of her cherry chapstick.
Just the taste of her cherry chapstick. Yeah, it's so good. It's such a good line.
Oh, God damn. I remember when that came out, I was upset about it because I had just figured out I was bi. And so I was like mad. I was like, wait, is she bi or not? I want answers, which is obviously not the point of the song. But it was the point of my own longing.
Well, I think, and like, I think also specifically, like, I don't know how old y'all are, but like, I'm 36. So like, I kind of came of age in the early aughts and like, you know, I feel like there was just this moment. I mean, I talk about Katy Perry, I talk about like, you know, Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera's kiss.
Yes.
Was it the VMAs that happened? And like, just these sort of moments of like public expressions of queer, I don't know what to call it. And it's funny because I feel like people get very like on their high horse about these things. They're like, ugh, like performative lesbianism. It's such a problem. It's like terrible. It's queer baiting. And I'm like, but like, I don't know how to express to you that when you're like a closeted queer teen and you're like, wow, that made me feel some kind of way, you know? And I mean, so much of the essay is about how like, you know, a lot of what we are and what we want is like unknown to us. And I think that there's not a lot of grace kind of given to the like not knowing or like not fully understanding something about yourself. And there were times in my life when people asked me if I was queer, and I said no, but it wasn't because I was like in the closet or I wasn't like hiding something. It's because I like didn't understand, you know? And I think that it's a thing that's hard to explain and like not to be like young people these days, not to be like that person. But I do think like I wish I could express like that it is this like weird journey. And like, you know, I am 36 and like there's stuff about my sexuality that I'm still learning like right now, you know? And that's kind of, I mean, it's terrifying. It's really stressful, but it's like really nice, you know, to be like, oh, that journey's never over. Like you're always sort of beginning to understand things about yourself and your desire and your body and your wants and your mind. And like, that's like a lifelong process. And I just feel like there's just not a lot of, I don't have a lot of patience for like judgment about that sort of thing. I've just really lost all patience for it.
And see you come in. Welcome to the episode. This is S.E. Fleenor, and I'd like to ask a favor of you today. Can you do me a favor? Are you open to a favor?
Does
it feel weird for me to ask you for a favor?
I have a curfew. I have to be back in by 7 p.m., but right now it's about a little bit after noon, so I think I've got some time.
Why do you have a curfew?
Good question. I guess I never really questioned it.
It's the cats. The cats gave you a curfew.
Yeah, like, pretty much.
Better have your bitch ass back here by 7 p.m. to feed me.
Also being a grandma, like I am 100% grandma sleeping schedule. So I'm like, 8 p.m., pretty late.
Seems like time for a nap / bedtime.
Anyway, the point is...
Okay, if you're going to do me the favor, whether or not you have a curfew, that favor is, can you go rate and review of the pod? Give us 5 stars. You could just say, oh man, bitches are cool. That's great. We love that. You could say, oh man, I've never loved Harley Quinn more. I'd be surprised, but I'd be okay with it. You could go in and say, wow, these interviews, they blow my mind. Or whatever you want to say. And now listen, hey, I know not every platform allows you to rate and review. For instance, I don't think Schmodishmai does, but you know what does? Schmapple. Schmodishmasher. So go over there. I'm not giving them free ads. Go over there, rate and review, and guess what? You don't even have to listen to us on those apps to rate and review us there. Don't tell anyone I told you, or tell everyone. Let's game the system, y'all. So rate and review us. 5 stars. I was going to say 5 stars for each bitch. But there's so many of us, that'd be like a billion stars. So give us a billion stars on your favorite podcast platform, or Schmatchmacher, or Schmapple.
Schmapple while you're drinking a Snapple.
And there's something you said in there that I think I've been really sitting with, which is the concept of not knowing. And that's just, it's something that our society, I think many societies, are really resistant to. You know, people want a clear label. They want a clear box to put you in. And I think bisexual kind of fucks with those boxes, right? Like, we know that it makes people uncomfortable because it's not like, oh, I know you'll have a wife, I know you'll have a husband. You know, throw in polyamory, throw in gender diversity. And we've got layers and layers of unknowing. And this is another piece in your essay that really stood out to me is you said something to the effect of, you know, we look down upon exploration, experimentation, and we say those are bad things. But because we're trying to defend ourselves, and so we take this sort of born this way narrative. And I'm totally on the same page in that I think so much of what we need is for people to explore who we are, what our genders mean, what our sexualities mean, because how could you know? And we live in compulsory heterosexuality is real. And so if I have attractions to people that would make me quote unquote straight, which being a non-binary person, I would love to know anyone's definition of what
right,
that
I
is.
Was going to say, yeah.
But let's suspend that layer. Mm-hmm. But like the straight appearance, like if I don't know that it's okay, or if I don't see women kissing on screen, even if it is, I don't even know, performative, let's say, like how do I know those possibilities exist growing in small town Colorado where I'm forced to go to church 3 times a week? Do you know what I mean? Like there's just a whole world beyond my knowing. And so it's almost like we got to allow the not knowing to let people go into knowing. That might be gibberish, but in my mind, it made sense.
No, totally, totally. That's literally the path. It's like you don't know until you know. That's how knowledge works. Like that's how like understanding works. It's like most people, like, I think the word ignorant has this like really like weird connotation that's like very complicated. But I think that like we are all ignorant until we're not ignorant anymore. Like we don't understand something until we understand it. I mean, some people say not understanding, like that is a reality also, but like, you know, it's like, you aren't just born knowing something. Like it's just, that's just not how it is. Like there's just, I don't know. And I want grace, and I especially want grace like for queer people from other queer people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just feel like, you know, I want there to be like less judgment, and I think just more grace. And to me, this movie is such a perfect embodiment of that because it is like, it so acutely kind of gets at these things. And also like, you know, Megan Fox, who is obviously like a lot of the hatred of this movie, the contemporaneous hatred of the movie was directed at her because of like sexism and like fucked up Hollywood shit. But also like she's queer, you know, and has like talked extensively about like how hot she found the kissing scene, like how, you know, so like, What a gift that we got to have this like incredible performance from this like amazing actress who like did an incredible job and also was like, yeah, it was like a piece of like her own queer experience, a queer actress getting to play this like iconic queer character. And like what a fucking gift, you know? Like what a thing that we had that like we did not appreciate at the time.
I was going to say, yeah, a lot of the stuff around Megan Fox is really interesting because very much many of the things that you just said, I have read interviews with her over the years where she'll say things like, I don't necessarily think that feminism is meant for people like me, though I do identify as a feminist. And I think that that has something like she doesn't feel welcomed by feminism or something like that. Like she identifies that way and she believes in the practices, but she feels judged if she says that she's a feminist, perhaps even by other feminists. And I think that there is something really interesting about that. And I think perhaps also applies to maybe her sexuality. That is complete, you know, me saying she's not said that. But I think that there's something very interesting about what you're saying, giving people the grace, giving people any person could be a feminist, right? Like you would think. And so I am interested whenever she has these interviews, because I do think that it
speaks to what you're saying, as that she was very badly judged by a lot of people, but she was judged by a lot of like women and queer people as well. And that is kind of the more complicated part of Jennifer's body, right? Where you're just like, even in the movie, you know, she's being judged by people who like maybe are just sick of having to be the one who extends the hand to help or something like that. But it's also people who just kind of have lost patience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Megan Fox. But I saw a bunch of interviews with her, and I'm really glad that I think it feels like it's really come around, right? So I think that that's kind of the best thing. That's like the wholesome part of the story is, you know, now it's something that I feel like they can be really proud of. I saw an interview with her, and I believe it was Diablo, but they were just kind of talking about it. And it just seems like a cathartic experience for both of them. And that made me feel really good.
Yeah.
So I, you know, thinking about the performativity piece, I, you know, it was just Bisexual Visibility Week, and some people decided that meant it was time to gatekeep bisexuality.
Wait, what? No, wait, I don't. Oh, God. Do I even want to know?
You do. You do, because the last stroke is the best part. So someone like sent out a tweet and was like, here are celebrities who say they're bi, but have never been in a relationship with a person of the same gender.
No! No, someone did not send that. Oh, someone did that. Christ. This is why I'm not.
It's you're right. You're right to not be on Twitter.
You're right.
Okay, this is why I'm not on Twitter. 100% right. That makes me want to throw my computer across the room. I am sorry. I'm sorry for screaming so loudly.
Screaming is the right response. It's the right response. It's what I did. And what was fucking beautiful is one of the people whose picture they put in it was Cardi B. And Cardi B retweeted it and said, I've been eaten out. Bitches or pussy, I can't remember which one, before you were born. Sorry, I didn't have my Nokia phone photo of it to prove it. And I was like, that's the bisexual anthem. That's the bisexual anthem right there. Because as much as, and I'm so glad, you know, Sarah, this is what brought me here is actually what you said about, you know, I'm so glad for Megan Fox that she's getting some vindication, because this is such a fucking performance, such a beautiful film. There's so many layers happening. I find it deeply tragic and deeply hilarious. And I think those are hard things to conjure in general, let alone like in a cult horror film. And it's just, it's such a beautiful thing. I love it so much. And but performativity and claims of performativity and this hyper focus on regulating and tallying up the lives of bisexual people isn't changing. I always, every year I'm hoping it will. And it, there's just still this demand. And I get a piece of it I understand. I understand that a lot of folks in LGBTQ+ communities feel very much like they need to protect their identities. And I have a lot of love and support for that, because I understand that it comes from a place of pain. It's so strange, I think, with bisexuality, because there's this, you know, the visibility week, and then it turns into, but are you visible in the wrong way? Are you visible in a way we do not think is appropriate for bisexuals? And I just want to know, who's the council deciding what the appropriate way to be bisexual is?
I mean, if there is a council, I want to be on it.
You know but I also think that you should be in charge.
I want to wear whatever outfit the bisexual council is required to wear.
You know, I imagine it's a lot of like bright colors. I'm imagining there's some like sitting in seats the wrong way.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Finger guns. Exactly. But you know, it's weird to be in this point where we've you know, in some ways, Sarah and I talk about this a lot. We've come so far, right? Like, oh, we've all like the opinion on Jennifer's body has turned, but the opinion on individual bi people hasn't, right? There's still this show me your bi card. And I remember being in college and being like, I'm bi and or queer. Those were like the terms I was using and still use to this day. And someone was like, that's really cute. It's really, really cute that you say that, because it's clear that you're a lesbian. And I was like, wait, what? And then I went to, and then I was at a job and I was like, oh, I'm bi. And a queer woman was like, you're the straightest bisexual I've ever met.
I have also had someone say this to me. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, you're like, oh, so I'm the queerest. I'm the most lesbian straight person and the least lesbian straight. I'm very confused about why you care so much, A. B, why, what? So there's just no win. You can't win for losing.
I mean, I think this just comes back to this idea of like grace again, because I just feel like, yeah, I mean, I've definitely had, it's so funny because I, you know, so much of my identity, I feel like I sort of like straddle a bunch of like identity spaces that, you know, it's like, whatever, I'm fine with it. I am, I'm just me. I'm like doing all, whatever, I'm just being me. But I do feel like people really do, I think people get uncomfortable, even other queer people are like, you know, people that exist in sort of more like distinct and clear spaces get uncomfortable when somebody occupies like a middle ground. And, you know, I just wish that we didn't feel a need to like, you know, make people like let people do what they're going to do. Yeah. And just be who they're going to be. Like, I don't know. I, it seems so obvious to me. And yet people really insist on doing everything else.
Yeah, and leave Cardi B the fuck alone.
I mean, and like that piece of it too, like also, just, I mean, again, like whatever, I could start yelling for 3 hours about like weird performative social media bullshit. And like, you don't want me to do that. No one wants me to do that. So I won't do it. But I do feel like also just like, yeah, like also speaking of somebody who like obviously does not have the profile of Cardi B, but somebody who like exists in a kind of public eye, like you also just like don't know people. I don't know. Like, I just feel like that's just like the audacity of that tweet is like, honestly has like sent me back several inches. I'm like sitting further away from my computer than I was before. Cause I'm just like, I cannot fathom. Also, Twitter is horrible. Also, it should be burned to the ground. Like, yeah. What can possibly possess you to do something or say something like that? Like, I just don't understand.
Yeah, it's wild. Yeah, you know, I mean, I think what I find hopeful, you know, if I'm going to have a little silver lining, is that I think more and more bi plus, let's say, bisexual plus, you know, queer, pan, what have you, folks are finding themselves in each other and creating space for that. You know, it's changing in the time that I've been, you know, a writer, the 10 years I've spent writing essays, you know, things have changed so much. In that I'm, you know, I'm writing for bi editors. And that feels really different. Getting to write for a bi editor, it's like, okay, you get it. Mm-hmm. This is not, there's some things people want to be cut and dry and fixed that aren't. And attraction for me is one of those things where I can be shocked by something I am attracted or someone I am attracted to or some act I am intrigued by. And you were mentioning sort of that discovering new bounds of your sexuality, of yourself. And I think that that's, to me, that's what's beautiful about it. That's what's beautiful about being, you know, of getting lost. That's how you were talking about it. That's what's so beautiful about the lost part is like, I want to wander around in the not knowing. I want to wander around in the curiosity. And I'm going to find some no's and I'm going to find some yeses and I'm going to find some oh, really's about myself.
Who does that? May we all find the oh, really?
Oh, really?
I wish that was, it's like a blessing to put on your head. I'm like, I wish for you many oh, really's.
Right? I do. That's, and when you talk about like, you know, queer youth and let's just broaden that LGBTQIA plus youth, like that's what I want for them too, is I'm like, you're fine, baby. Yeah, you're fine. Yeah. Just the way you are, whatever you feel. And guess what? I'm so sorry. That'll probably change. And yeah. I have known so many people who have been like, I am bi and I will always be bi. And then they'll be like, I'm a lesbian. I will always be a lesbian. And then 3 years later, they're like, you know what? I was right the first time. I'm bi. I realized I was attracted to another man. And I'm like, this is great. This is wonderful. Yeah. Like, why wouldn't I want you to be fluid and growing and finding yourself and words that feel good for you? And then maybe they don't anymore. I just am disappointed that we're so, even within LGBTQIA plus communities, we are so, we want things fixed. You know, it reminds me of like the pronoun thing where if like you tell someone your pronouns, they're like, I'm going to memorize that and I will use that for the rest of time. And it's like, ooh, I did change those again. And I'm sorry that that's going to break your whole worldview, but that's just the fluidity of being alive, you know? So I don't know. I think it's, there's sort of these two, well, probably many more than two currents moving in the same time. There's this demand for, are you really bi? And then I think there's a ton of bi plus folks who are like, oh, fuck you. And that's beautiful too, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like Jennifer would say, oh, fuck you. You know?
Yeah, so oh, totally. Trying to tell her. She'd probably rip their throat out.
Even better. Listen, if Megan Fox wants to eat my soul, I'm in.
You're like, yeah, got it. Yep.
Not a problem. Do you like this lipstick better? Should I change to a different one? Whatever you need. I love you.
Oh my God. This conversation is cracking me up because I feel like I alternately have been like very shocked to find out how basic my sexuality is and like how there's not. Like as a kid, and
you
like,
don't want up, Jennifer to eat you alive.
I mean, I'm not gonna say no, you know, like I'm still open to the experience, but I definitely have been like thinking this whole time, like, yeah, you can be somebody who has a fairly fixed identity and not expect other people to uphold that or to like fit into your worldview too. In like a positive way, like you should be open at least to other people being open, right? It's kind of just like one of those where I don't know, like whenever I was like young, I was just like, oh yeah, like I'm bi. And then like later I was like, you don't seem to like men at all. Like, and then later it was like, actually, yeah, you're not bi. But then it's yeah, basically the exact opposite of everything you were just saying, but in a good way. Because mm-hmm. we work together in this queer community.
And I think that that is dead on something you do talk about in the essay, Carmen. And I was curious, you know, I know we only have a few minutes left, but I was wondering if I could get you to tease that out a bit. Sarah and I talk about this all the time. Sarah, I'm going to tell Carmen the joke and then you can decide if you want it to actually be in the podcast.
Okay.
What if Sarah's...
I'm so curious. So,
I know.
So Sarah's a lesbian and one of Sarah's favorite jokes is she's half bisexual because everyone always says bisexual people are like half lesbian, half straight. And I think that's really funny.
But that is really funny. Wait, hold on. So you're a lesbian, but you're half bisexual. So is it you're a quarter? Wait. Oh my God. Wait. Now I'm actually like, I'm like running through it. I'm like,
no,
that honestly, that is a really funny joke. I really like that.
Thank you. I think it kills me.
Because also
every
then
time.
I'm like thinking about fractions. I'm like, is it like it's inverted?
That's
does
it.
You're half bisexual? Does that make
because none
that's
of
so
us
good.
Are half of something. Like we just are right. ourselves. Like that's
that is
kind
very
of
funny.
The thing.
I really like that.
But and it's also kind of just a joke because of how people view bisexuals, which I've always found to be completely ridiculous, you know? It's
totally.
Like, oh, you're half this, half that. And it's like, that is super not true of like any. I never like look at bi people as like a math equation, right? Like it's
right,
never
right,
just like,
right.
oh, like, you know, the numbers flying in front of my face, right?
Half of you belongs here.
Because it's also not like you're like looking through your calendar, you're like, well, I've already gone out with a woman this month, so definitely I have to pick a man next. Like, it's not like that's not how it is. Like, it's not like half, 50% of the time, or you like stop halfway through, like having sex with somebody, you're like, sorry, I've like used up all my male
time
quota. And now I need to return. Yeah, I've hit my quota, precisely. I feel like, yeah, right. It's like, again, it's like just this, like, it's funny because it's like, you know, I'm thinking of myself as bi or queer. And it's like for a while, I mean, I haven't had sex with a cis man in a really long time. It's not out of the question. And like occasionally I've had this thought where I'm like, am I just a lesbian now? But then like I'll have a response to like a very attractive man where I'll be like, oh, okay, never mind. Like I definitely am still like in this space. And I think there's just something kind of, yeah, again, like, yeah, there's just, I don't know, so much capacity for mystery. And I sort of love that embracing that and like leaning into that, leading into the, again, the oh really, which I'm going to steal. I'm going to use that forever. That's so good.
Please. Yes. Delightful corner to turn in your life.
I know, right?
Again, I'm going to squeeze every bit of juice out of the lemon that is Carmen. I don't know why I called you a lemon. I didn't mean
okay.
it. I take it back.
Lemons
I
are great.
I'll make you a lime. I like limes a little better. Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to squeeze everything out of the lime that is this conversation. So it kind of goes back to where I started when I couldn't help myself but tell you how fucking hilarious Sarah is. But you talk a little bit about how bisexuality is sort of a transitional space for many queer people. Many queer people do go from... because we live in a compulsory heterosexuality driven society, go from straightness into bisexuality, into queerness, or, you know, and whatever form of queerness that is for them. Some people, you know, find bisexuality and that is their home. And I felt like you handled it with such grace in the essay. And again, that gentleness, that lovingness that we're talking about bringing to people in general. But it is this big tension in many LGBTQI plus communities where people feel hurt that someone was bisexual and is not. People feel upset that, or people doubt that people are bisexual. They feel like it is a transition. And I'm curious for you, you know, when you hold that sort of bigger picture of of transition, let's say, in a very specific context of sexuality. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. how do you make sense of that? And how do we hold each other a little bit more gently?
That, like, if you are, like, truly, like, a lesbian, say, like, you were, like, I am not, like, how, you know, what is that? Is 5 on the Kinsey scale, 6 on the Kinsey scale? Is it a 6 or a 5? What's the top of the...
Oh, I have no idea, but I'm excited.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
It's a 6, yeah. The only reason I know it's a 6 is because there is a drag troupe called the Kinsey 6, but it's S-I-C-K-S. That's literally the only reason I know, but it's a 6.
Very funny. Okay, great. So there are, like, you know, obviously there are people who are like Kinsey 6, and that is like an experience that I wish that we lived in a world where you could just be like you knew that from the beginning. And it was just like, when you begin to think about sexuality, you're like, oh, I'm a Kinsey 6, right? But we don't live in that world. We don't yet. I don't know what that world looks like, and I can't imagine it's coming anytime soon. I like to imagine, but I really don't think, even though I feel like, obviously, it's like really heartening to know how like queerness and gender identity and stuff are like thought about really differently now by young people than they were when like I was a young person. But like, I still don't think we're in that world and won't be in that world for a while. So like, there's an existence that I can imagine where you could literally just be like, oh, I'm a lesbian. And like, just realize that off the bat, immediately, when you begin having sexual thoughts, and like, boom, that's it, right? But we don't live in that world. So like, what I say in the essay is like, most people pass through bisexuality, like it's a body of water, and like, sometimes they stay there, sometimes they are like, nope, keep going, and like, end up in some other harbor or some other like little inlet, you know, where it's like, I'm going to like the lesbian cove or whatever, I'm going to, you know, like, I'm heading somewhere else, you know. But like, it is almost like a universal sexual experience for most queer people, to have existed in that space where you're like, not quite sure, or like, you're like, yes, and like, it existed at some point, albeit however briefly. And so I think that we have to just like, that's the sort of piece of it that I feel like it's like, yeah, like, it's this actually, and like, whether or not you stay there or not. And, you know, in the essay, I talk about this sort of very personal story about like how I was, you know, sort of an early experience of mine was like having this sort of brief sexual relationship with this woman who then later was like, I'm not gay. And like, as far as I know, it doesn't identify as gay, like, married a man. I mean, I haven't talked to her in a long time, but like, and it was like super painful when I was, you know, a young queer person, like, madly in love. But like, also, I think that as I've gotten older, I think I've, you know, reconceived of that whole sort of interaction as it's just like thing that requires more grace from me, because I'm like, we just sometimes just don't know about ourselves. And like, I can't know the intentions or the feelings of another person. And like, I am not responsible for that. And I'm also not like, I can't know it. Only they can know it. And so, you know, which is not to say that people can't like act badly or hurt feelings or be capricious or whatever. That is obviously possible. But I just think that there is something about like, sometimes you just don't know. And I think that assuming that bisexuality is either in itself a transitional phase, or if somebody, you know, is saying it, that it's not real, or if somebody I just feel like, I don't know. I feel like it's just another opportunity for grace. And especially because it is really this like weirdly shared experience that most queer people, if not all, have of just like not knowing, you know, for like a second, even if it's just like one day, because of compulsory heterosexuality, because you're like trained to believe this thing about yourself, there is always a moment of confusion. And maybe it's if you're lucky, if you're like a Kinsey 6 and you have like a day of confusion and then you're like, oh, wait, like, that's great for you. It can last a lot longer than that, you know, but like, I don't know. To me, it just feels like this kind of beautiful shared bay that's like near all of us. And like, whether we're still there or not, like, I think it's actually, you know, to think about it in that way is just, I don't know. I just, that's how I want people to think about sexuality, and not be so like gatekeepy and weird and judgy and like, you know, intense.
Yeah.
Which is also not to say that like queer communities don't have their own challenges. Like, I feel like people are always sort of talking about like, I feel like there's like anxieties about like visibility and anxieties about like, what do you do if you're like a bisexual person and you have an opposite gender partner? Like, do they belong in queer spaces? Do they not? I mean, I feel like every community has its own challenges, right? Mm-hmm. And like, bisexual people have their own challenges, especially when they're in opposite sex relationships, right? Or again, using that with air quotes, because like,
right,
what is gender? Yeah. But like, you know what I mean? Like
what people perceive, right?
That's a challenge that you have, and you have to figure that out. And that's like a fair conversation. But also, I just feel like, I don't know. I just really want us to be loving and give each other grace, because no one else is going to give us that grace. Do you know what I mean? Straight people don't give a fuck. They don't care. So, like, I think we owe each other, like, tenderness, the same tenderness that we would want delivered to us.
Mm. Yes. And when you talk about it as, like, a body of water, all I can picture is naked Megan Fox swimming, like,
A
shark, like the creature of the Black Lagoon, like every Baywatch. Like, it's all of it, you know? And you're just like,
yeah, she just swims right by your boat.
She's like, I'm bisexual as fuck. What do you want?
Yeah, you get like a deep shiver down your spine. You're like, oh my God.
should I follow her? Is that
right? Yeah.
Is that what I should do here? Oh my God. Carmen, this has been amazing. I mean, my brain, I have so many things to think about. Sarah, I want to make sure, did you have any last little thing you want to do?
No, basically, like, if this conversation could go for 5 hours, I would have 5 hours worth of things to say. So we can go ahead and cap it now. I literally there was maybe like 20 things that came up in my head while we were talking where I was like, I wonder what Carmen thinks about this. And maybe we could talk about this as a group. And it's like, guess what? You can't. People have to go. I have things to do too. Like, you can't. But I love this conversation. And I feel so grateful not only to have been able to talk to you like twice this year, but to be able to talk about one of my favorite movies. I love this movie, and I am so happy to see, like, this collection of essays, I think, is wonderful. I'm so excited to get through the rest of it. I've only read your essay so far, but they all look so good with so many amazing creators.
Yeah, it's a great anthology, and definitely if you're listening to this and you are, like, queer and interested in horror, like, you need a copy of this book, truly. It's excellent.
And if you don't have a pencil, it came from the closet, but do not worry. We will have a link to it in the show notes.
I'm a 5.9 on the Kinsey scale, and I'm going to be a 6 by the time I'm done reading this book. But it's going to make me even queerer.
Or maybe it'll be a 6.1. Maybe you'll
some
remote.
She broke the scale!
Right, exactly.
Your queerness is too profound.
Sounds about right.
You've broken everything.
Sounds like me.
Well, Carmen, if folks want to learn more about you online or follow you on social, I know you're not in the Twitter sphere. Bless you for that. I'm very jealous. Where can people learn more about you?
I am on Instagram, the one social media I allow myself, though I could abandon it at any time if it comes too stressful, because that's what I do now, is I leave social media that stresses me out. But yeah, I'm on Instagram as Carmen M. Machado, and my website is carmenmariamachado.com. So if you want to see, like, links to, like, stories I've written or essays or things, like, that is where you should go.
And of course, folks, don't forget It Came from the Closet, which you can pick up from Feminist Press. We will be linking to it in the show notes. Yes, I'm saying it again because I think it's required reading. And I, you know, again, Carmen, I'm flabbergasted. To have you on twice in a year feels ridiculous. But to get to talk about Jennifer's Body, one of Sarah's favorites, one of my favorite films, obviously a seminal work in horror and in queer horror and in bi horror. And I'm going to be thinking about your essay, this movie. And you know, and this whole conversation, I'm going to be like thinking about all the coves of lesbians I'm going to go to. I imagine those are real places.
I'm in the bisexual bay, but I also want to go to Lesbian Cove. I'm like, yeah, I'm over here.
I just want to see what's up.
Listen, you're all invited to visit anytime.
You couldn't see me, but I was like craning my neck. I'm like, what are they doing over there?
Yeah, I know, right?
Again, this has been
hanging out with our
delightful
cats, basically. Yeah.
It's a lot of cats in Lesbian Cove. You know, good thing we like cats. All right. Well, thank you, listeners, for joining us today. Thank you, Kate, for making us sound great and cutting out weird parts. Sarah, you're the best. Carmen, you're the best. Monica, we miss you. And patrons, thank you for being a patron. If you're not one, please join us so we can do more of this. Everybody, have a great day.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Bitches on Comics. We are a bi-weekly podcast where we talk to your favorite comics and pop culture creators and critics about what matters to them in comics and pop culture, as you might have guessed. You can follow us on Twitter at Bitches on Comics and on Instagram at Bitches on Comics. Our website is, brace yourself, bitchesoncomics.com. If you go there, you can listen to any of our episodes, and we've got other shit that we put on tabs. I don't remember what it is. I am in charge of updating the website, however, so good luck.
Thanks for the heads up. I'll go to this website now. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Sarah Century, and you can find me at www.sarahcentury.com and Twitter and Instagram. Still Sarah Century on those.
I'm Essie Fleenor. You can learn more about me at essiefleenor.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @SE_Fleenor.
Bitches on Comics is recorded by Kate Warner, who plays in the band Churchfire. You can find them at churchfiremusic.com. Our music is recorded by Katie Taylor, who plays as Earth Control Pill. You can find her music at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com.
Bitches on Comics is recorded in Denver, Colorado. We want to recognize the indigenous peoples who have inhabited and do inhabit this land. The Arapaho Nation, the Ute Nation, the Cheyenne Nation, and others who have been erased from our history and collective memories through colonization.